True Crime Today.
This is the ongoing story of a small Idaho town and its residents, a tightly knit community that hasn't seen a murder since 2015, an environment where one thought they could feel safe and secure until a quadruple homicide stole the lives of four young souls on a mid-November evening, leaving far more questions than answers. Where will the investigation lead, and how do we get there? This is the University of Idaho Murders podcast. Four killed for what?
Welcome to the program. My name is Tony Bruschi. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts. You don't miss any episodes and breaking news updates as we have them on this horrific case that's affected the lives of so many people. Obviously, in Moscow, Idaho, the students, the families, the individuals directly impacted by this, forever torn apart by the senseless murder of these four innocent people. On today's episode, what we're going to do is we're going to go through a timeline of events as we know them as of this broadcast and just work our way through with a baseline update. There's not a lot to report as of late. If you've been keeping up on this case and you're an online sleuth or you're on the message boards or the Reddits or Facebook groups or what have you, you're not likely going to learn anything new here because we're not going to go into a lot of rumors or things like that. Those may be touched on a little bit for the most part. We try to just stick with the facts here on this podcast that we know. Now, I want to say that so nobody's expecting, oh, there'll be something brand new. There probably won't be something brand new here today. I wish we had that for you, but no one at this moment has a whole lot new. But if you're diving into this for the first time and you're really wanting to kind of grasp what this case is all about, that's what we're going to do today. We're going to walk through everything that has occurred, like I said, up until the point of this broadcast. And obviously, it all goes back to mid-November in Moscow, Idaho. An evening, a Saturday night, like many other normal Saturday nights that college kids spend on a college campus. You go out with friends, you have fun, you're partying. And an advantage to this town that so many of the kids had and the families had of sending their kids there was this sense of security. This is a town that hasn't seen a homicide since 2017. Relatively safe. It's one of those towns where people talk about keeping their doors unlocked. Now, were the doors unlocked here? There was no sign of breaking an entry, so one almost would assume that maybe the doors were unlocked. That's how secure everyone felt. And really, rightfully so, there really hadn't been a sign of anything like this. So it all starts out on Saturday, November 12th. Ethan, who was 20, originally from Conway, Washington, Madison Mogan, 21, of Idaho. Zanna, 20. And Kaylee Gonzalez, 21, of Idaho. All in this house, eventually, later in the evening. As we'll learn a little bit later on, Ethan, not a permanent resident there, but staying the night. There were two other roommates in the house that were on the bottom floor, the other four on the second and third floor of the building. And this house, from what we understand, from what we've heard verbally from previous tenants who have lived there, this statement I thought that we heard in the last week was very important. Someone who lived in the basement of this home said, you know, as far as sound goes, I barely heard anything on the second and third floor the whole time I lived there. Maybe if the TV was super loud, I'd hear it. But other than that, I didn't hear a whole lot. So when a lot of people are asking the question, how did they not hear anything on the second and third floors? That might answer that from a firsthand account of someone who actually did live in this house for some time prior to these kids living there. So Gonzalez and Mogan, they're lifelong best friends. They went out to what's a place called the Corner Club in downtown Moscow from about 10 p.m. to 1:30 a.m. That's according to the Moscow police. At around 1:40 a.m., they were seen on video at Grub Truck. This is the infamous food truck video that we see out there. And then they used a private party for a ride home. The private party, people asking, is that an Uber? Is that, what does that mean? There's a private driver service for sororities and fraternities on campus that gets kids back home safe. And they have cleared the driver that night. They got back home about 1:45 a.m., according to police. They were seen in the surveillance video at the Grub Truck. The person who drove them home, they're not considered suspects, according to authorities. Let's talk about the video at the Grub Truck for a little bit, because there's a lot of speculation of there's a hooded man there, there's a person acting this way, and people are going nuts online trying to explain or look at the psychology of this. And rightfully so, everybody's trying to dig in and find something that maybe has been overlooked. At the same point, we have to be careful that no one's life gets ruined in this whole story, because people are going to try and jump to conclusions very quickly. As far as we know at this time, everyone there has been cleared. Now, we will learn later on that one of the individuals, one of the individual's parents, the father, Mr. Gonzalez, has said, there's some people, as even the mom said this, there's some people that they feel may have been cleared a little bit too soon. Now, was that someone in the food truck video? Was that someone somewhere else? We really don't know the answer to that. They were not very specific.
I just feel like there's been a couple individuals that were cleared very fast. That may not, maybe should not have been. And yeah,
she had the strong alibi.
Just really fast.
You can dismiss.
An hour later, and we're like, what? And I don't know. I don't know anything about those individuals. I just know
right. They
were people that, definitely should have been looked at. And
yeah, I mean, I think we were all very surprised at the beginning how quickly they cleared people. And I think the criterion, what the clearance was meeting. But keep in mind, though, the word cleared doesn't mean a whole lot. Police clear people very quickly, and they can unclear you just as fast. It doesn't mean you are out of the woods if you've been cleared. At that moment is what it means. Police do this quite often in order to see how people continue to live out their lives. It almost gives people who may be guilty a sense of confidence. And then sometimes they slip up and more evidence comes to light as to who may be behind this. So might be a strategy on the part of law enforcement. So that's those two at the food truck. Meanwhile, Chapin and Kernoodle, who were dating, went to a frat party house on Saturday night. They also got home about 1:45 in the morning, according to police. Chapin did not live at the house, but he was sleeping over with his girlfriend. Normal college stuff. Two other roommates who survived the attack, not considered suspects. They went out in Moscow on Saturday night as well. And they returned home by 1 a.m., according to police. So they were likely in the home when all of this went on, likely down in their rooms. It's believed that the four students were killed in the house between 3 a.m. and 4 a.m. on November 13th. There was also a dog in the home, according to law enforcement. At that moment, Moscow Police Chief James Fry called it an isolated, targeted attack. Now, how you get to this conclusion that quickly, literally the morning of the attack, is beyond anyone. Unless we're going to learn some information that we do not know as of now. They've been told everybody, hey, okay, it's targeted, go about your normal lives. They backtracked on that shortly thereafter. Two surviving roommates were in the basement. They slept through the murders, according to police. On the morning of November 13th, the two roommates called friends over to their house because they thought one of the victims on the second floor had passed out and wasn't waking up. Now, likely they were behind their door. Big question was asked of why didn't they notice this horrific murder scene? My guess, because this has not been cleared up very well yet, is that they were behind a locked door. And a lot of it was not necessarily noticed until friends came, and then friends got in, and friends, someone, they even said who exactly, dialed 911 and requested help for an unconscious person. The 911 caller's identity has not been released, but police said multiple people talked with the 911 dispatcher. The other people in the house at that time have also been cleared. Never been cleared up to the rest of us, though, who those other people were, those friends that were called over. They found the four victims on the second and third floors. Police said they don't believe the male, Gonzalez and Mogan, tried to contact numerous times that evening, is involved. And that should be noted. Prior to the murders, on Gonzalez's cell phone, there were several calls to an individual. And they've looked into this, as far as we know, and they've cleared that person. Nobody quite knows why that many calls were made back to back to back. But again, it's late at night. You're in college. There's a thing called drunk dialing. It happens. Or you just got out of a relationship and you're calling. These are things I think we all may have done at some point in time in our lives that we can understand where there may have been absolutely nothing nefarious going on. And according to the authorities, cleared. Autopsies were conducted on November 17th, determined that all the victims were stabbed multiple times. Now, stabbed multiple times, but there is belief that one of them saw a harsher version. I mean, obviously being stabbed is very harsh, but one of them seemed to have had far more detrimental wounds. I don't know any way to say this. Other than, I don't want to get gory or gross or anything like that, but one of them seemed to have had more extreme injuries than the other. This is Kaylee's mom speaking.
They have told us that it was targeted, but they told us they can't tell who. We asked specifically, and they said, we'll try to get that information to you, and they got back to us a day or so later, and they said, we're sorry, we can't give you that information. But then a day later, we saw in the news that it was not targeted, or they think the whole house was targeted. But
I'll cut to the chase.
Yeah.
Their means of death don't match.
Maddie's,
they don't,
and Kaylee's cause of death, it does not match based on the autopsy report.
They don't match. Yeah,
yeah. Would indicate that one of them.
He doesn't have to go up the steps. Let's stop playing games, guys. I need somebody to step up and be an alpha, be somebody to be a leader. Don't make me do it. I don't want to do it.
So that leads you to believe exactly that. And they're wondering why more of that has not come to light in the public, or why the police have not said more about it. Again, maybe it has something to do with their investigation and trying to put these pieces together. On Monday, November 21st, rather, Ethan had his memorial service. He was a triplet, born right before his sister and brother, who also attended the University of Ohio. He was one of the most incredible people you'll ever know, it was said. His mother, Stacy, told reporters before his memorial service. 20-year-old lived his best life at college. His obituary said he loved his social life, intramurals, and tolerated the academics. He laughed continuously. He smiled when he woke up and was still smiling when he went to bed, as the obituary said. He was kind to all and a friend to all. November 28th, in an interview with ABC News, Steve Gonzalez said that the students died quickly and did not bleed for hours, so an earlier 911 call would not have saved their lives. He said nobody suffered and nobody felt like that kind of pain, unquote. He also said he's feeling a little defeated, frustrated by the lack of transparency from police, supports and trusts the law enforcement officers who are diligently working the investigation. Coming to November 30th, a vigil was held. Grieving families, classmates gathered at the University of Idaho on November 30th for a candlelight vigil. Several people make statements, tributes, and even some of the two surviving roommates came together, wrote a statement, and had that issued as well and read by a pastor. And this is what they said. This is their remembrance of their other four roommates who lost their lives.
My name is Chris. I'm one of the pastors here, and I'm going to be reading two different letters, one from Dylan and one from Bethany. This is from Dylan Mortensen. To Zanna and Ethan, the two best friends but perfect pair together. They had this unstoppable, loving relationship. They both would look at each other with so much love. Everyone knew they were the perfect duo. They both had this fun, passionate, crazy, but good energy. They both were the kind of people who cared about everyone and would help anyone. Zanna was the life of the party. If she was there, it was going to be great. But Zanna was so much more than a girl who could just have fun. She was strong, intelligent, hardworking, and a beautiful person. Zanna was taking this math class, a class I was also taking, and the amount of effort and hard work she put into that class was the only reason I tried to pass it. She would constantly uplift me and tell me I could do it. Zanna was also a very big people person. She could make a conversation with anyone, any friend and any parent. She loved the parents, especially the moms. Every tailgate, she would talk to a new mom, get their phone number, and text them. Everyone that got the chance to know her loved her. I was and am so lucky to have experienced a life with her, as her being one of my closest friends. I didn't know Ethan until this semester. I wish I would have gotten to know him more. He was so sweet and loving to Zanna. Zanna was like his whole world, and you could see it in him. While Ethan was like a friend, he was also like an older brother to me. I got to experience what an older brother would be like. He was this goofy guy who I could make sarcastic jokes to. Every time I saw him, he'd give the sarcastic jokes right back. He was also loving to my friends and to me. He cared, like Zanna, about everyone. He was easygoing and easy to talk to. I'm glad I got the time I had to know Ethan, and I'm so thankful to have gotten to know such an amazing person. I know somewhere Zanna and Ethan are together, keeping each other company, watching us, and telling us it's okay and that we have each other. Maddie and Kaylee, the inseparable duo, the two best friends that were like sisters. Maddie and Kaylee were like second moms to me. They taught me a lot on how to be a responsible adult, but also how to live life happy. They changed the way I look at life and how to enjoy life to the fullest. Maddie was the cute ray of sunshine. She didn't ever have a negative thought in her mind. I don't think I ever have seen Maddie stressed about anything. This happy-go-lucky kind of girl who loved life to the fullest. I got to know Maddie last year and loved her when I met her. And then I got the chance to get closer with her this year. I'm so lucky to have gotten to experience life with her in it. She had this passionate love for everyone. Everyone who knew her got to feel her love. And she was so compassionate to everyone and wanted everyone to be happy. She got this new hot pink puffy jacket and wore it everywhere. She was a very big pink color kind of girl. She would do this cute little skipping dance every time I saw her. She just had these cute little mannerisms that I loved. She was such a beautiful person inside and out.
That audio right there from Memorial Tribute to the victims, and those letters written by the two surviving roommates who were in the basement that had slept through this absolute, you know, horror. So where does it go from here? The murder weapon, which police believe was a fixed blade knife, has not been found. Steve Gonzalez said the victim suffered large punctures from a brutal weapon. Detective said this weapon is probably something that the killer paid some good money for and something that they're likely very proud of. Thousands of pieces of evidence and information have come in. They're trying to go through all of it as best they can. You have state, federal, and local authorities involved. But that essentially is the timeline of the events. So many questions about how did this person get into this house, get out of this house, and not leave a mess, considering how horrible of a scene that was left. That's a big question. Because if you look on the outside of the house, there's no sign of forced entry. There's no trail through the snow of blood or on the deck or anything like that. Especially, too, we've learned from Steve that the person, the intruder, the killer, likely came through the second floor slider door.
With common sense, but I'm not a professional, so I want to specify that. But they've said the entry point was the slider or the window. It was in the middle floor. So to me, he doesn't have to go upstairs. His entry and exit are available without having to go upstairs or downstairs. Looks like he probably may have not gone downstairs. We don't know that for sure, but he obviously went upstairs. So I'm using logic that he chose to go up there when he didn't have to. And I can kind of tell by my daughter's texts, messages. She didn't call 911. She wasn't saying anything along the lines of like she had heard something or she was in fear. So I'm just putting the dots together.
So many questions, so few answers at this point. But that's a review and that's a timeline of what we know as of now. We'll keep following this case for you and bring you updates as we get them, breaking updates, and then longer form episodes as we have been diving deeper into this and really focusing on the facts as much as we possibly can. Please press subscribe so you don't miss any of those updates. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening to 4 Killed for What.